it went straight down the middle. Then it started to...
Let's just look back at some of the other majors other than the Masters. Just a couple of things I'll ask you about. One would be at the U.S. Open 1989, which, speaking of Oak Hill... you were T2 there behind Curtis Strange with Chip Beck and Mark McCumber. So you had a pretty good U.S. Open there.
Yeah, I took double bogey somewhere.
Nine, did I?
Or did I take one on 15 or something?
I think you bogeyed 14, doubled nine.
Double nine, was it? And yeah, that crippled me a little bit, but... Yeah, I was booming it. I can remember on that last hole, I hit it so far down there on the right-hand side. I think I just hit a 9-iron on the green. And did I birdie the last?
I don't remember.
Someone said on Twitter I birdied the last. I didn't think I birdied the last, but I might have done.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
But, yeah, great experience because I didn't really play that well in majors. I think if you want to be a great major player, you've got to be a great chipper and putter. And I just wasn't quite – I had my moments, but I just wasn't consistent enough.
Yeah.
You know, you get the people like Faldo. He's just made for majors, you know. Great short game. Grind it out. Put it in the right places. You know, some people are just, you know, just like a bit more natural and just play as it is, you know. Maybe I'd be a bit different in the times now, a bit more of the stats and everything, be a bit more careful, play in the right places as well.
I know you would have loved to have won the Open Championship. You finished,
four
top fives there. Yeah, so you had a lot of chances, huh?
Yeah, again, you know, wasn't a lover of ceilings golf courses.
Interesting. You know,
whinging too much, but probably bad bounces. I was sort of that player work. It just sort of like landed short. So like, I was sort of a player. If you're going to land it on the green, I take a club less and smash it and try and put too much spin on it.
Yeah.
Instead of sort of like, it's almost like I needed to use more of a ball, which was, I'll never forget playing with Christy O'Connor Sr. When he played a ceilings golf course, he played like a pinnacle. So we could make it run onto the greens. It was quite interesting.
Yeah.
And, sort of like being short and you're putting too much spin on it, it just checked, just short of the ground. I had some moments there. You know, obviously, Lytham destroyed me there. I think that was most probably going to be my moment there, having an extra driver in the bag. I was only using it four times a day anyway, and I just, you know, tried to go back from a graphite steel shaft to a metal shaft, and Robert Allenby's it was. I'll never forget it. And you know, caddy just left it in the bag. You know, unlucky we started on a par three, but it'd been a par four, would have noticed it. But I finished third, whatever I finished, I battled hard.
Yeah.
But when you get something like that happen to you, I just couldn't get it out of my head, really.
Yeah. Well, Ian, you probably don't know this, but Bruce did a very similar thing, and it was at Lytham.
Oh,
but he didn't have two drivers in the bag. He had zero drivers in the bag.
Wow.
Or at least I didn't use my driver. I was standing, quick story, standing on a practice tee next to Trevino. We were paired together the last day, both playing like dogs. I said to him, God, I can't drive it. I can't drive in a 40-acre field. He said, well, try my driver. And I said, oh, yeah, sure. You know, you're 5 inches shorter than me, and you stand about 4 inches further away from the ball than I do, and you think I can use your driver? He says, just hit it. So I hit three perfect drives, Ian. I mean, right down the middle. He said, we'll both use that driver today. And I said, what? He said, yeah, it'll be easy. He said, we'll have an R&A guy with us. And whoever has the honor, take my driver. And then while he's looking at the ball, we can just switch behind him. And we did that all day. Nobody, the R&A guy never picked it up. And about 10 years later, Trevino's at a dinner after, you know, because he'd won the Open. And he's at a dinner with, I'm trying to think of the name.
It was Peter Dawson.
Peter Dawson. He's sitting next to Peter Dawson. And he says to Dawson, I need to ask you a question. Do you think Bruce Devlin and I should, you know, turn back the 103 pounds that we won when we played at Lytham and used the same driver? He said, what? He said, yeah, yeah, we used to. He said, yeah, surely, sure you did. Just, I've heard enough of your stuff, he said. Anyway, that's the quick story. No driver.
That's brilliant. Imagine trying to do that now.
Oh, yeah. God, can you imagine?
Oh, God, yeah.
Anyhow.
It's funny that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Talking about, you know, I've just got a driver now, and it's quite interesting because with the, you know, with the newer drivers are so upright, and it's difficult for being so short. And
yeah, because you've
got a driver coming in at 55 degrees angle now with 8 degrees loft on his section.
Toes up in the air. Yeah.
It's toes so much about this one, you know. Now I've got it. Looks like it's like running away from me. It's perfect.
Oh, really?
First time I've hit a fade properly. a proper like powerful fade.
Well, let's talk a little bit of Ryder Cup, and I've got to say, Ian, as a player, 8-time player as a Ryder Cupper,
yeah,
you played, I would call it the golden era of the Ryder Cup. It was a transformational period because, you know, for our listeners, starting in 83, which, and we'll talk about all these, but 83 PGA National, you know, the European players have just come on the team. You got some young stars have emerged, and it takes Lanny Watkins stuffing one on 18 to just edge out for the U.S. side. Nicklaus, of course, heading up the U.S. side. Jacqueline on the European side, and now all bets are off because you guys are coming. You guys are for real.
Yeah, I said, well, I hadn't played before that, but it's my first one. Jacqueline's first one, was it? I think it was, yeah, as captain. Yeah. So he's upgraded everything. So we've gone from a sort of a Ford Escort to a sort of like an Aston Martin. So we all get there, or a Concorde there, or whatever it was, and we're having a great time with Paul, PGA, National, West. Really hard golf course, by the way.
Sure was, yeah.
So, so didn't know much what was going on. All I can remember is that I didn't play the first day, the first round in the foursomes, and I played in the afternoon with Sam Torrance. And we come to the tee, and I'm so nervous. you know, I physically wanted to go to the bush on the side and
vomit. Like,
get rid of vomit everywhere. I said to Sam, telling Sam that, he says, he taps me on the shoulder and he says, don't worry, I'll look after you. So the first hole sort of like three little hole down, what, 350 or something, 380. So Sam gets on the tee. We're playing. After we're playing, Calvin Pete and Ben Crenshaw. So they've gone. Sam gets on the tee. 3-wood. Boom, straight right. In the bushes on the right, I think it's gone out of bounds, lost the ball. Thanks.
I'll take care of you, he said.
I'll take care of you.
He'll look after you.
1 iron down the middle, 9 iron on the green, pop, birdie. I make have the hole. Second hole, water all down the left, isn't it? Good hole, driving a 5 iron or something. Sam on the tee, boosh, straight in the water, left. Boom, I drive it down the fairway on the green, 2-putt, get a half. Next hole, back down the other way, par 5, coming the other way. But Sam on the tee, boosh, straight left in the water. That, I make birdie, I'm 2 under after 3, thanks, Sam. Then, of course, par 3 the next hole, he has 7 birdies after that.
He now, did.
I think we shot 7, we have the match.
Oh, so, my.
We're both like 7 under, 9 under or something. It was a fantastic match and what an experience. So that was my opening match, playing them two guys. It was brilliant. You know, you got Calvin Pape and it's like, it was Daniel Dark, wasn't he? I know. It was brilliant to watch. Sometimes I thought, I try to play like that, so I'll kick my left arm bend all the way through the shot. It works, you know. Yes. You want to hit that neck little cutter, just do that.
Yeah, we just remember Tony taking us through the lead up to this Ryder Cup in 83 and how he was very insistent on, okay, we're going to step up our game here. We're going to fly the Concorde. We're going to have team meeting rooms. We're going to have proper kits, Pringles or whoever going to outfit us. And we're going to be more like the Americans and really take this thing seriously. And it's got to be properly funded. And boy, did he get a good thing started for you guys.
Yeah, that was a change. And I think like he did it for 3 or 4 years. I can't remember how many years. And I think
he did it for four.
But that was a backbone of, definitely for me, when I was sort of like the captain of the Ryder Cup, I managed it the same way as he did, basically. Some other players were different than that who managed it. But I just thought it was fantastic the way Tony did it. Obviously, as a young player, he'd come to me and talk to me. And find out how I was feeling, who we'd like to play with, are you all right playing with him? And, you know, when I was always, I didn't matter who I played, but I got on with everybody. And eventually, obviously, he put me in 87, he put me with Faldo. That was, you know, everybody thought, oh, God, that's strange. But when you think about it, it was a great move because Nick was so steady, wasn't he? We're playing Muirfield Village.
Yeah.
And he's just, you know, he's down the fairways making lots of pars, and there's me, I'm sort of like the wild man, I can make 10 birdies or I can make none, you know, and I think it matched out really good. It made me relax because I knew he was going to make some pars and be steady, and I think he relaxed him because he knew I was going to make some birdies, so we played great together. It was a great team.
Yeah, between those two Ryder Cups in 83 and 87, of course, you went to the Belfry one. That was when Trevino was heading up the U.S. side. And then that loss at Muirfield Village with Jack still the captain again and Jacqueline on your side, we've heard it described by guys like Curtis Strange. I mean, Lanny Watkins is about as painful a loss as we're ever going to have.
Hear that? That's the sound of a walk-off albatross, a two on a par five to win a two-day golf tournament. That shot happened to me, 1 in 600 million odds. Since then, people call me Albie. Now, I've told this story so often, my friends can't take it. I'm pretty sure my wife, next time I tell her, she's going to leave me. So I decided to start a podcast to tell the entire world about it because it deserves it. It's the craziest shot you've never heard of. And guess what? There's tons more stories like this all around golf. And that's what our podcast is all about. Join me and my fellow degenerates, Panda and Shepherd, as we dive into them. Insane bets, crazy what-if scenarios, and all the you-had-to-be-there type moments in golf. Find us wherever you get your podcast. Did I tell you about my albatross?
Well, yeah. A lot of people don't realize when Ohio, at Muirfield, it's a state or where a lot of Europeans went to. Because it's like a mining place area. So a lot of people came over from the UK. And when it came down to a lot of support, it was incredible. We had so much support for the Europeans. And I'll never forget Jack and all the team. He had to go and get flags to get people to sort of like get some support. It was brilliant. But, you know, Jack had set the golf course up, the fastest greens ever and everything. Oh, it's like, oh, this is great, you know. I loved it, so I'll never forget playing Fallon. We're playing Tom Kite and Curtis Strange. And you know what Curtis is like? He's like, there's two guys there who hate to lose, isn't it? And,
yeah, boy, isn't that the truth?
Yeah, and Lanny Watkins, he didn't like it either, did he? So, or a lot of them didn't. Anyway, but it was a great week, and yeah, as I say, like, Jack was fantastic. Everybody was fantastic, and it was a magnificent show anyway. So it was great for golf, let's put it that way. Not just for the Ryder Cup, but it was good for golf.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about a not-so-favorite memory, and that's what they call the War by the Shore now. That's the 91 Ryder Cup at Kiowa, which was Gallagher against Stockton and those sides. Great matches. I won't go into a lot of the details. We've talked about it I bet we've had two-thirds of the players on our program, you know, talking about these various Ryder Cups. But the thing I always remember, and this is the side of things that the fans just don't see, you know, win or lose, you guys are still buddies and still hang out. And Corey Pavin told us that you kind of helped him on the bus on the last night's dinner. I guess there were maybe supposed to be two buses, and you were able to all sort of jam into one to go to dinner together. You remember anything about that?
I don't remember much about it. Most probably. So how come I was helping him?
Yeah, might have been the blind leading the blind. Is that what you're saying?
Most probably would have been, yeah. But yeah, I'm thinking the wrong one, yeah. Oh, I mean, yeah, there was a lot of people upset, a lot of tears and everything. But
yeah,
that's how it goes, you know. And as you say, you 2 years' time, we could be in the opposite position. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's, you know, we all, you know, I was always for one going to either to their tea room or we come to our tea room. And we're all friends, and it's just a game of golf, I know, but that's the beauty about it. Everybody just wants to win. And it's great to see that passion in the guys, you know. Yeah. And that's what all about, is that it doesn't matter if I was playing Bruce tomorrow, I want to beat his ass, you know what I mean?
You wouldn't have any trouble.
Yeah, I don't know about that. It all depends how many shots are giving you, Bruce. Right?
Yeah, well, you'd have to give me shots. I can assure you of that. I would take a shot for every 2 years older than you.
I suppose you want to go off the red tees as well, do you?
Yeah, no, I'll stay off the same tee, but. that'd be fun. I'd love to do that one day, play with you. That'd be a thrill of my life to do it.
Yeah.
So tell us about the experience you had in 2006 being the captain of the European side.
Well, you dream of being a captain, and I was more nervous about doing speeches than being a captain, to tell you the truth. When I was made the captain and was in Dubai, first thing I did is just start my speech straight away. And you know, I know I've been a vice captain for Sam, and I knew he used this guy who writes speeches and things, comes and sees you. So it was great. I had this guy out. I wrote the speech sort of thing. And it was quite interesting where he says, you just got to take your time, really. And so, like, so you do a line and then you put, like, 10 dots, 1, 2, 3, and that's, like, seconds. And you'd wait and start. And it was good. We had some moments picking the teams. You know, I had Thomas Bjorn, he didn't like me not picking him. He went ballistic, put a bit of pressure on me. Obviously, Darren Clark, his wife had passed away. It was very emotional. Darren was playing fantastic golf. He took a few months off or whatever it is, and I asked him to play. And he thought about it, and, you know, and I said, like, you know, it's be fantastic in the memory of his wife, Heather. And eventually said yes. And then when he came down, it was either Thomas Bjorn or Lee Westwood. Two fantastic players. And I did in the spur of the moment, 5 minutes before the, you know, when I was in the press room. And I just went with Lee Westwood. I think they were very close friends. They've been in the same stable, same manager. Spent a lot of time together, and as it turned out, it worked out fantastic. They won every single match together, and that Ryder Cup, it was, you know, we weren't playing the strongest team that week, but it was a great memory. Yeah, we didn't lose any sessions or anything. Won every session.
Yeah,
it was a great experience, and you know, sitting there talking in front of guys that, you know, you've known all your life, but you're the captain. Now they've got to listen to you. And,
yeah.
You know, and say, you know, there's no superstars in the team. That was one of my own, that's my thing. You're all individuals and you're all exactly the same. So, you know, why should I treat anybody different? And that's when we're only there to do one thing, and that was to win.
Yeah. Right. So speaking of team play, you were able to represent Wales in quite a few different competitions, including the World Cup and the Dunhill Cup. What are some of your favorite memories from those?
Well, obviously the World Cup playing in Hawaii and playing with a good old friend of mine, David Llewellyn. Bruce, do you know David Llewellyn?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, uh-huh. A great guy, full of life, and always got a massive smile on his face. Anyway, we're playing in Hawaii, and the weather is so windy and so wet. Anyway, so I end up shooting something like 14 under par. I beat the next player by seven shots. I think that was Payne Stewart. And he was seven shots better than anybody else. And my partner, like David Llewellyn, was like 14 over par. You know what I mean? But we win in a playoff against Sandy Lyle and Sam Torrance. And it was really funny because I lost count playing because Sam had gone out of bounds, but then made a birdie with his second shot, was a par five. So it ended up as that I'd made a par, Sandy had made a par, and Sam had made a six. Now Llewellyn, I thought he, for some reason, he had a putt for a four, but he had like a 6-footer for a par, which was going to win it. And I'm sort of like thinking he's got two for us, so I must sort of like not really concentrate. Anyway, he holds it, and obviously jumping around everything, we win and everything. Anyway, so after about a year later, we're having a chat, and he says, "Yeah, I built a big room on my house. I called it Woozy's house. You paid for it." David, you hold the putt at the end, mate. Yeah, we played some, playing the World Cup. We went everywhere playing the World Cup. The Nissan Cup. I don't know what I played, the Hennessy Cup. We played so many great events playing, the Dunhill Cup. Golf was fun.
Yeah. 17 World Cups, Bruce.
I know.
And Mr. Devlin, 17 years before you won the World Cup in Hawaii, he and Mr. David Graham went down to South America for one in 1970.
Yeah. 1970. I missed that one.
Yeah, you weren't quite up to speed then, were you?
It was a funny one. Another story for you, girl. Like, we're playing Italy, and I'm playing with a young guy called Phil Price, who's not so young. He's about 55 now or something like that. And I'm playing with him, and we're leading. I'm leading the individual by miles. I'm playing great. And we're playing the 16th hole, and Phil Price is really, really slow anyway. And I'm bursting for a pee. This is really – I'm bursting for – it's the 70th hole. I'm playing with Sam Torrance again. I'm calling Montgomery. I've knocked it into about 20 foot, and I'm walking up this hill to the green. My ball's there, and I see this bathroom at the back, port-a-loo. No one in it, and I thought, gotta go for a pee. So I run up the green, bent to my ball, got to start getting to the port-a-loo, and I thought, oh sugar, forgot to mark it. to mark the ball. Anyway, put it 2-shot penalty, double bogey. We lose by a shot. The World Cup.
Oh no.
Sorry. I won the individual, but my partner, I felt so sorry for it. You gotta see Sam's face looking at me like, well, I've got to penalize you. You can't just say you didn't do it. You can't do a Bruce Devlin and just say, don't say anything. You know what I mean?
Oh, my. You could have said you had a magnetic marker that when you tap down with your putter, it kind of stuck on your putter, because I think there's a rule covering that.
Yeah, well, anyway, Jesus.
Well, a lot of team play. You played a little bit on the senior tour over there. As a matter of fact, are you still the only one that has won the Order of Merit on both the senior tour and the regular tour over there?
I could be, yeah. I think so. Most probably am, yeah.
Yeah. So, won a few times?
Yeah, I've been on that tour now, 15 years? Just come back from Austria, actually. It was nice to get going again. I haven't played for 8 months. Hadn't walked for 8 months. Shot, 2 over, 4 over, 67 the last day. 8 birdies, so getting back into it. That was nice.
Now, do you have status on the senior tour over here? Are you able to play if you want?
Yeah, I sort of like, as you know, I had a bit of an argument with all of the World Hall of Fame. I couldn't seem to get into that. couldn't understand that some players could get in and I couldn't get in with my record. But eventually came over and actually did some fitness and was determined to show these people that I deserved to be in the Hall of Fame. And I got a load of invites in a row, like 7. And that's hard work, getting invites. So you have to play like 6 days in a row. And I managed to win in Houston, and I think that helped me to get in the Hall of Fame. So now, once you're in the Hall of Fame, you're exempt for life, really, pretty well. Well,
gotcha.
I don't think you're exempt for life. You've got to be able to score a decent score anyway.
Yeah. So you got the call to the Hall in 2017. You went in with Davis Love III, Meg Mallon, Lorena Ochoa, and the great Henry Longhurst.
Absolutely. In New York, it was I'd never really been to New York, and so we all took the family. You know, we had the weather was fantastic. We had a great time, and it was a fantastic event. And, you know, doing a speech again was not a thing I liked doing. And I've watched it a couple of times, and actually had a friend from Wales who actually worked for Welsh television, BBC Welsh, and he sort of had a handheld camera and went everywhere we went. It was like personal guy, and he did this video. Came out fantastic.
That is great.
With the children and everything, and it was just a delight to be there. Like I said to all you, we want you to speak for over about 7 minutes. So I worked out my speech, and how would you thank everybody in 7 minutes. I managed to do all that. Then, like all the other guys, went on for about an hour. We were there for I think everybody was getting a bit cheesed off, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but Davis Love was, you know, everybody was great, but Davis was really good as well. So
yeah,
it was good.
And then 10 years before that, you received the Order of the British Empire. That had to be pretty thrilling too.
Yeah, I managed to get MBE first and then I got the OBE, and then, you know, I've been twice. I was with the Queen, did it the first time, and mm-hmm. then the last time Prince Charles, the winner, King Charles now did it. Yeah. And, great experience taking your family. And just being in the palaces, you know, anybody gets an award like that or, you know, honored like that is just something special anyway.
Yeah. Well, as we wind down, Bruce, as you know, we have three questions we like to always ask our guests. I don't know if Ian has done any research as to what we ask, but I'm going to let you ask the first question.
Okay. You ready, Ian?
Okay.
All right. If you knew what you know now when you first started on the tour, what would you have done differently?
I'd have to say nothing.
Because that's a good answer.
I think that I've been pretty lucky in my life that I've lived a really normal life, that I can go into a pub, I can do anything and talk to anybody. And basically, I wouldn't really change a thing, really. If I did anything, I wish that I'd spent more time with my children and my family. Okay. And it's great having grandchildren now because I have more time to spend with them and watch them grow. But I think it would have been spending more time with my family.
I think a lot of working fathers probably feel the same way.
Yeah, you know, that's the way it was in them days, and a bit different now, a little bit.
Okay, so we're going to give you one career mulligan. Where do you take it?
First tee at Lytham, get rid of a driver.
There you go.
There you go.
That was easy.
That was easy. I can do that one. Didn't even have to look that one up, did I?
No, you have to swing either. It saves you two shots.
Bruce, why are you going to hit me with this last one?
Yeah, your last one is we get a lot of different answers. It's a simple question. How would you like to be remembered?
Again, just the way I am, just for being sort of a guy who was a natural, wasn't above anything else, and just being a natural person and treated everybody exactly the same. And, you know, in my life, you know, I might be a superstar in someone else's eyes, but I'm not really a superstar. I'm just a normal person like everybody else.
Well, you have been a superstar today with us, Mr. Woosnam. I can tell you that. As I told you early in the show, Mike and I look forward to spending this time with you today, and we thank you for your time, and thank you for filling us in on all those great stories of your life. And you are the same Ian Woosnam that you were when you were 16 years old. I'm sure of that.
Yeah, just a bit more knowledgeable, but I want to just say something to you, Bruce. You keep busy and don't stop. And I will give you them two shots off the Reds.
I'll take it.
I've got you, Mike, out as well. So we'll have a good time around.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, we really appreciate you spending time with us, being so generous with your time, and we thank you for joining us on For the Good of the Game.
No problem. Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you for listening to another episode of For the Good of the Game. And please, wherever you listen to your podcast, on Apple and Spotify, if you like what you hear, please subscribe, spread the word, and tell your friends. Until we tee it up again, for the good of the game, so long, everybody.
Whack down the fairway, it went smack down the fairway. Then it started to slice just a smidge off line. It headed for two, but it bounced off nine. My caddy says, long as you're still in the state, you're okay. Yes, it went straight down the middle, quite a way.